54. Book 3. The Sorcerer's Geometry, in which the Western world claims for itself a unique ability to change and be creative. It equates this with individualism, and so must denigrate the communal, especially dance, even while freely taking from it.
55. On the one hand, non-European cultures were seen as too imaginative. They were believed to ascribe supernatural powers to non-human actors, inanimate objects, fetishes, and false gods. On the other hand, they were seen as not imaginative enough and incapable of creativity or social evolution, locked in the benighted past. Max Haven, Crisis of the Imagination, Crisis of Power, 2014. In this largest part of Africa, no real history can take place. There are only accidents or surprises that follow one another. There is no goal, no state here, that one could observe, no subjectivity, but only a series of subjects. Hegel writes, and then quotes, "In Africa, all are sorcerers." In sub-Saharan Africa, it has become virtually an ideological free fire zone for a spectrum of diagnoses which converge in explaining crisis by problems internal to Africa, whether the environmentally destructive practices of its rural poor, the rapacity of its neo-patrimonial states, or through the recycling of what may be called primordial narratives of African exceptionalism. Sam Moyo and Paris Yeros, Reclaiming the Land, the Resurgence of Rural Movements in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, 2005.
56. J. A. G. Pocock, Barbarism and Religion, 2003. We have seen that the absence of pastoral or arable economies and cultures rendered European stadial theories inapplicable to the Americas, and the Americas, in consequence, an anomaly in history as Europeans understood it. Without shepherds or ploughmen, it was fatally easy to relegate all American societies to the savage stage that was all that remained of the stadial scheme, supposing them to be hunters, food gatherers, or primitive planters and gardeners, who had not developed agriculture to the point where it generated commerce and the state. Within theories of reflexive modernization, the third world is deemed to stand outside history. The pervasiveness of abject poverty is not viewed as a consequence of global unequal development, but in terms of the lack of reflexivity in cultures and regions unable to engage on the path of sustainable development, a term created by such theorists of reflexive modernization themselves. For them, these cultures are said to be lacking an enabling environment for change. But their version of tradition always seems to stem from conditions which are categorized as being pre-modern, as if tradition, like the notion of the pre-modern, is lodged in a past stage of events and is not an important concomitant of the present conditions of modernity. Peter Harris Jones, Ecological Knowledge and Sustainable Development in Emblazer, In the Way of Development, 2004.
57. Lucy Goodison, Holy Trees and Other Ecological Surprises, 2010. In contrast to the complex, unstable, predominantly urban life of the contemporary West, the ancient village is pictured as happy, earthy, simple, and frozen in time, eternally enacting its universal rituals. There's no sense of internal conflicts within the community, nor of processes which might cause change over time. This imaginary village encapsulates what contemporary culture feels it has lost and involves the recreation of natural roots as well as national, racial, and gender identities," end quote. Derek Gregory, The Rush to the Intimate, 2008. 3 years of U.S. Army experience in occupied Iraqi cities prompted, in addition to military thinking, what has been called the cultural turn, involving the contentious use of anthropologists to provide information on non-Western societies and improvised role-playing in mocked-up versions of cities like Baghdad and Kabul. This turn, however, continues the, quote, exorbitation of cultural difference that is at the heart of the war on terror. There is little room for an Arab modernity in many of its versions, hence the traditional city and tribal society. Because Muslims or Arabs opposed to U.S. foreign policy and its military adventurism are supposed to be outside and opposed to the modern. The cultural turn acknowledges that there are cultural practices and values to be understood, but locates them in a completely separate space to Western culture's modernity, end quote.
58. Indigenous knowledge has been applied in the fields of agriculture, medicine, and eco-management, but why not its application to the economic or political? Indigenous knowledge needs to be liberated from anthropology. Outside of it, it can be a tool for autonomous social transformation, but inside, it is likely to become another pawn in the ongoing game of epistemological hegemony seeking, characteristic of wide swathes of social and natural sciences. J. Clammer, Culture, Development and Social Theory, 2012.
59. Historiography has been content to deal with the peasant rebel merely as an empirical person or member of a class, but not as an entity whose will and reason constituted the praxis called rebellion. The omission is indeed dyed into most narratives by metaphors assimilating peasant revolts to natural phenomena. They break out like thunderstorms, heave like earthquakes, spread like wildfires, infect like epidemics. In other words, when the proverbial clod of earth turns, this is a matter to be explained in terms of natural history. Even when this historiography is pushed to the point of producing an explanation in rather more human terms, it will do so by assuming an identity of nature and culture, a hallmark, presumably, of a very low state of civilization, and exemplified in those periodical outbursts of crime and lawlessness to which all wild tribes are subject. Alternatively, an explanation will be sought as an instinctive and almost mindless response to physical suffering of one kind or another. Ranjit Guha, Prose of Counterinsurgency, 1988.
60. In large parts of the country, this was just pure criminality. Let's be clear. These riots were not about race. These riots were not about government cuts. And these riots were not about poverty. No, this was about behaviour. People showing indifference to right and wrong, people with a twisted moral code, people with a complete absence of self-restraint. British Prime Minister David Cameron on the London riots of 2011. Thomas Walsingham, St Albans Chronicle, on the English Peasants' Revolt of 1381. On the next day, Corpus Christi, the rebels went in and out of London and in a short time easily persuaded all the poorer citizens to support them in their conspiracy. And when later that day the sun had climbed higher and grown warm and the rebels had tasted various wines and expensive drinks at will and so had become less drunk than mad, for the great men and common people of London had left all their cellars open to the rebels, then, among other things, they assembled and set out for the Savoy, the residence of the Duke of Lancaster, unrivalled in splendour and nobility within England, which they then set to the flames. This news so delighted the common people of London that, thinking it particularly shameful for others to harm and injure the Duke before they themselves, they immediately ran there like madmen and set fire to the place on all sides.
61. The Chuncho in Indian culture is the wild man, dating back to Inca concepts of the outsider and the insider, who still exists as a motif in modern-day weaving designs, in the Corpus Christi Fiesta, and at that of the winter solstice. He is the uncivilized figure from the jungle north and east of Cusco, Peru, who can always be recognized by his feather hat dress. The fiesta involves a mock battle between them and the Collas, the llama herders, who in the modern day are often rich merchants. Significantly, the Chuncho always wins.
62. Suzanne Buck Morse, Hegel and Haiti, 2009. The slaves kidnapped to Haiti in the years before their successful uprising at the end of the 18th century came from different locations in the interior of Congo and Benin, where they had mostly been prisoners in the long-lasting wars of the region. In Africa, they might have been enemies, but shared this common trauma of enslavement and the horrors of the Atlantic crossing. It is in this context that voodoo came into being as a syncretic, open, public religion. It was constructed out of allegorical mode of seeing that experiences history as catastrophe, and was needed to build fractional alliances of trust among former enemies and who may not have known of each other's cultural existence before the crossing. None of voodoo's precedents in Africa ever conceived of eliminating the institutional arrangement of master and slave altogether. No European nation did either. The rightful source of Haitian religious practice is the experience of slavery, and it is one that led to a radical anti-slavery that was politically unprecedented.
63. The radical impetus of voodoo was partially hollowed out by a subsequent history of dictators and renewed exploitation so that it could be used as a weapon of terror by the Tonton Macoutes, a supposedly voodoo secret society, by the dictatorships of Papa and Baby Doc Duvalier, in which state it excited vicarious thrills in the Western imagination in the mid to late 20th century. When the dictators were finally removed, the existence of a popular president, Aristide, was intolerable to the elite, and in 1991 he was removed in a military coup. In 1992, the music group Boukman Experience released a song, Dangerous Crossroads, Calfou Danger. The very name was a provocation. Joseph Boukman, having been a voodoo high priest active in the Haitian Revolution at the end of the 18th century. The song invoked ancestral spirits, natural forces, minor deities, and the supreme being to predict a dangerous future for those who abuse the Haitian people. By threatening trouble at the crossroads, the song highlighted a place of crucial importance in African folklore and Caribbean voodoo. George Lipsitz, Dangerous Crossroads, 1994.
64. John Mackenzie, sent to Southern Africa by the London Missionary Society in the 19th century, wrote enthusiastically of his work in weakening the communistic relations of a tribe among one another and letting in the fresh, stimulating breath of healthy, individualistic competition. Christians of the 16th century saw dancing as the vilest vice of all, fixed on with an image of the pre-Moses Israelites dancing around a golden calf. Dancing, declared John Northbrook in his 1577 treatise against dancing, is dishonest and sexually charged, and the nature of things which nature hath hidden, modestly covered and then oftentimes, by means of lasciviousness, made naked, and ribaldry, under the color of pastime, dissembled. The wild, drunken dancing of the European peasantry was portrayed with this mindset in the woodcuts and engravings of Peter Bruegel the Elder and Theodore Debris. Debris then went on to create the template engravings for the naked and lascivious of the recently discovered non-European world. 100 years later, Peter Kralbein's 1731 Hottentot Dancing and Music, in his The Present State of the Cape of Good Hope, in effect repeats the composition of Debris, with the crouched drummer prominent. It is repeated again by Bernard Dietz's Mexican engraving, as if the crouched drummer was a universal figure to be copied, regardless of geography or culture.
65. The established template, with increasingly racist overtones, was used by slave trade investors like Archibald Daziel's narrative The History of Dahomey, and right through the 19th century. It was repeated in engravings like Camille Coquillat's 1888 Sur la Haute Congo, in which the Nala dancers could just as well be the Brise, and in writing like that of James Buell's 1884 Music Charmed Savages, which featured women who could not control their impulses. Behind the colonial sneer, there was fear, the fear of things getting out of control. Thus, in Cuba, U.S. occupying forces first banned drums of African origin and in 1902 banned all Afro-Cuban ceremonial dances as symbols of barbarity and disturbing the social order.
67. British Criminal Justice Act 1994, Section 63, brackets 1, powers to remove persons or attending or preparing for a rave. Brackets 1. This section applies to a gathering on land in the open air of 100 or more persons, whether or not trespassers, at which amplified music is played during the night, brackets, with or without intermissions, bracket, and is such as, by reason of its loudness and duration, and the time at which it is played, is likely to cause serious distress to the inhabitants of the locality, and, for this purpose, brackets B, music indicates sounds wholly or predominantly characterized by the emission of a succession of repetitive beats.
68. The Maroons, runaway African slaves, recreated a new version of Western African life in the South American jungle. Maroon artists are conscious of the artistic tradition within which they work. Just as a Western artist is easily able to recognize Cézanne's style and its importance for the history of Western art, so the artists belonging to this community in Suriname have no difficulty identifying the original works of specific artists and the fake ones too. And knowing the name of anyone who introduced a stylistic or technical innovation and approximately when the change took place. There is nothing more foreign to their concept of tradition than the ideas about communal and atemporal art that the West attributes to primitive production. José Eduardo González.
69. To Paris's universal exhibition come oil on cloth paintings sent from Ecuador. All the paintings are exact copies of the most famous works of European artists. The catalogue praises the Ecuadorian artists who, if they have no great originality, at least have the merit of reproducing with noteworthy faithfulness masterworks of the Italian, Spanish, and Flemish schools. Meanwhile, another art flourishes in the Indian markets and poor outskirts of Ecuador. It is the despised work of hands who are able to create beauty out of clay and wood and straw, bird feathers, seashells, breadcrumbs. This art, as if begging pardon, is called artisanship. Eduardo Galeano, Faces and Masks, 1989.
70. The Shipibo people from the Amazon region's creation myth tells us that in the beginning there was only darkness, in the midst of which dwelt a giant anaconda named Ronin, who circles the Tree of Life. The anaconda, reflecting back the images that she saw on her beautiful skin, began to sing the geometric patterns from which sprang the heavens, the earth, the celestial bodies, and all the creatures that inhabit this world. A world woven of the fabric of the song was the result, and therefore, even now, each person is imbued with their own distinct song pattern. By recreating these patterns in the art, the Shi people reconnect themselves to this original code.
71. In traditional societies, the denial of individual creativity is often proclaimed in sweeping generalizations, as with Henry Kamer's assertion that in Africa there is no creative artist who produces the masks and fetishes according to the needs of the moment.
72. Henry Ford, the innovator of the modern assembly line, as an old man, is a passionate antiquarian. He rebuilt his father's farmhouse and put it back exactly in the state he remembered it as a boy. He built a village of museums for buggies, sleighs, coaches, old plows, water wheels, obsolete models of motor cars. He scoured the country for fiddlers to play old-fashioned square dance. When he bought the wayside tavern near Sudbury, Mass., he had the new highway, where the modern cars roared and slithered and hissed oily past, the new noise of the automobile, moved away from the door, put back the bad old road, so that everything might be the way it used to be, in the days of horses and buggies. John Dos Passos, The Big Money, 1936. Henri Lefebvre, Introduction to Modernity, 1962. One of the most arrogant features of the new is that on both an emotive and an intellectual level, it manages in some obscure way to give the impression of being synonymous with creativity.
73. Eduardo Galeano, Centuries of Fire. Buyers want the Occultamente potters to sign their works, so they use stamps to engrave their names at the foots of their little devils. But often they forget, or use a neighbour's stamp if their own isn't handy, so that Maria comes out as the artist of a work by Nicolosa, or vice versa. They don't understand this business of solitary glory. In their Tarascan Indian community, all are one when it comes to this sort of thing. In the buildings of Lina Bobardi, an acclaimed Brazilian architect of the later 20th century, there are places for an occasion, places where time stops allowing for 1 second of astonishment. In her work, she acted like a peasant whose actions anticipate and are therefore unfinished. The peasant, who is constantly improvising, his faithfulness to tradition is never more than approximate. His active observation never ceases, and so he is continually recording and reflecting upon changes. Peasants live with change hourly, daily, yearly, from generation to generation. John Berger, Pig Earth, 1979.
74. In 1984, a MoMA exhibition in New York was entitled Primitivism in 20th Century Art, Affinity of the Tribal and the Modern. The title's extraordinary given the deconstruction of the tribal by mainly African historians who have shown how British colonialism specifically created and invented tribal chiefs in many areas such as northern Ghana, East Nigeria, and Sierra Leone, societies in which chiefs had not ruled in pre-colonial times. How, in 1924, in what is now Tanzania, the British feared that the breakdown of tribal custom and former control is responsible for a great lack of discipline.
75. What is the tribe? It is, very largely, a creation of laws drawn up by a colonial state, which imposes group identities on individual subjects, and thereby institutionalizes group life. In most African colonies after the Berlin Conference of 1884-5, the census divided populations into two broad groups. One was called race, the other tribe. The distinction was vital to the technology of global governance. When the state officially distinguished non-indigenous races from indigenous tribes, it paid heed to one single characteristic, origin, and totally disregarded another, residence. The Hakura system, that exists today in Darfur dates from the introduction of tribalization by the British. One distinctive feature of the colonial experiment in Darfur was that the native authority system tended to widen inequalities between peasant and pastoralist tribes. The consequences became clear in 2003, when the simmering conflict in Darfur turned into a long and terrible war. Colonial decisions there were driven predominantly by the realization that sedentary peoples were more easily controlled than pastoralists and were assigned to tribal homelands that coincided more or less with their areas of settlement at the time of colonization. For nomads, it meant needing to graze their livestock under the administrative authority of semi-sedentary or sedentary tribes. Mahmoud Mardani, What is a Tribe? London Review of Books, 2012. In the art world, vulgar conceptions of the primitive did, however, coexist with an appreciation of the quality of abstraction in one especial non-Western art. These were Andean textiles, often misjudged as Moroccan weavings that appeared mostly in Central Europe early in the 20th century. A substantial amount of them came from the Lima-based German importer of European textiles and grave robbery Fence, Wilhelm Gretzer. In Lima, European cloth and clothes were lapped up by members of the Peruvian upper class and seen as a mark of their place in modernity. Meanwhile, in the Gretzer household, two rows of undressed pre-Inca mummies crowded the hallway, his wife Erna drawing the line at having any in the bedroom.
76. Prioritization of design over execution betrays a ranking of intellectual over physical labor and is one of the hallmarks of Western modernity. It divides the scientist from the technician, the engineer from the operative, the architect from the builder, and the author from the secretary. Tim Ingold, The Art of Translation in a Continuous World, 1993. The Bauhaus Weaving Workshop not only borrowed the formal motifs from Andean textiles, but integrated also the relation of the structural process of weaving between the positive and the negative to the geometric designs. Virginia Gardner Troy, Annie Albers and Ancient American Textiles, 1993.
77. Ellis McEwan, William Morris Meets the Constructivists, 2010. In the designs of the constructivists Lyubov Popova and Varvara Stepanova at Moscow's first state cotton printing factory in 1921-22, the geometric form was considered appropriate to express the modern, automatically making connections to industrial civilization. And crucially, the geometric seemed anonymous, denying the presence of what was perceived as useless ornament. After her death, Popova was quoted by Ossip Brick as saying, "No single artistic success gave me such profound satisfaction as the sight of a peasant woman buying a piece of my fabric for a dress." Such abstract work as that of Rodchenko and Popova, the constructivists, with its emphasis on geometric constructions, was relabeled laboratory research. This revolutionary art, employing the methods of technical drawing and mechanization, had important links to the processes of modernity, such as industry and engineering. Mechanical tools provided the necessary discipline and control, and compass or ruler-drawn lines supplanted the hand-drawn. The constructivist's vision became deeply problematic, just as modernism was a profoundly ambivalent movement, capable of being mobilized in the services of communism, capitalism, fascism, or imperialism.
78. When the iconic modernist Black Square of Kazimir Malevich was unveiled in the newly named Petrograd in December 1915, it was placed high up on the wall across the corner of the room. It was the same sacred spot that a Russian Orthodox icon of a saint would sit in a traditional Russian home, a likeness not lost on the viewers of the time. He wrote of the picture, the visual phenomena of the objective world are in themselves meaningless.
79. Between 1910 and 1913, the ballet russe, under the impresario Diaghilev, took Paris by storm. Three ballets with music by Igor Stravinsky were seen as an avant-garde that did away with the stock narrative, traditional choreography, and the lush musical scoring of Delibes or Tchaikovsky's ballet music. The first was the Firebird, followed by Petrushka, and then, with no conventional narrative, the Rite of Spring. It was this dissonant piece that made the notoriety, which created worldwide fame for the troupe, when it provoked a riot. There were fights in the audience and things thrown at the stage. These exemplary modernist productions overused traditional Russian folk stories or settings, like the one in which, in return for setting the Firebird free, the Prince Ivan is later saved by a bird, just as he's about to be turned into stone by an evil sorcerer. Even the Rite of Spring, without narrative, was subtitled Pictures of Pagan Russia in Two Parts.